Today we begin a new series at Incarnation, centering around Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. And Jesus' Sermon on the Mount is a really important aspect of the Gospels. The purpose of the Sermon on the Mount is that Jesus wants us to know how we can follow him in every single aspect of our life. So much of the Sermon on the Mount, the transition is for us to go from people who think of our lives following God as happening 5 minutes a day in prayer or an hour a week on Sunday, to think about how we can love God and love others with every single component of our lives, every single aspect of our lives. So the next 3 weeks, we're going to be talking about Jesus' teachings on the Sermon on the Mount. For lack of a better term, they're focused on money, sex, and power. So this week, we're going to be talking about money and wealth. Next week, we'll talk about sex and marriage. And the third week, we're going to talk about power, how we love those around us and love our enemies. But throughout these next couple of weeks, we have to keep something in mind. When we read these passages, these are Jesus giving us commands. He's telling us what to do and how we should live. And this can be difficult for us sometimes. But we have to understand something about Jesus' teachings. The first thing is that we always follow Jesus' teachings out of response for what he has done for us. We never follow Jesus as, it's not like we're kind of climbing a ladder to earn God's favor. God doesn't have a giant sticker chart for us. It always begins out of thanks for what God has done for us. This goes back all the way to the Old Testament if you look at the Ten Commandments. The first commandment in the Ten Commandments is not actually a command. It's saying, Israel, I am the God that brought you out of slavery in Egypt. Therefore, here's how you should live. For us as Christians, Jesus has brought us out of our slavery to our sin. We no longer have to be dominated by our sinful desires. He has forgiven us our sins through his death on the cross. Now, because of that, we can now follow him. He has now given us, he has shown us how we can live our life, loving God and loving others. So we have to understand that Jesus gives us these commands in response to what he does for us. And so when we obey then as Jesus' friends. Think about the difference between when your boss tells you something to do and when a friend asks you to do something. When your boss tells you to do something, you do it out of fear. You do it because you're afraid, well, I'm not going to get ahead in my job, or maybe your teacher tells you to do something, and you're not doing it because you love learning. You're doing it because you want to get a good grade. But think about when a friend asks you for a favor. A loved one, it's actually a good thing. You're looking for, it's this opportunity to love your friend. Or a friend tells you, here's what I really enjoy doing. So yeah, this is great to know. I now know how to better love my friend. Jesus is giving us these commands as a friend. Seeing this is how you should live. So keep that in mind over the next couple of weeks as we go through Jesus' teachings. But today we're talking about money. Today, an estimated $5 billion are going to be spent on something completely insignificant that benefits just about no one. Do we know what this is? It's betting on the Super Bowl. They estimate that $5 billion is going to be exchanged today. And that is really silly, not just because a lot of that money is going towards the Patriots, but it's silly because this isn't going to benefit anybody. $2.5 billion are going to go to casinos in Vegas. And the other half is just going to go to people with money to have more money. Think about what that tells you about the society we live in. That we have so much money. We have $5 billion that literally we're just going to throw away for fun. You think about all that, what that money could do. And what we voluntarily give it towards. We have to keep this in mind, I think, as we read Jesus' passages today. And this brings me, I think, to my first point. The first thing I think that Jesus wants us to know when we read this passage is that we are rich. I think this is one of the most important things we understand. Jesus, you know, he's giving this message to everybody. He's saying, don't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. Don't store up possessions here on earth. But he doesn't call like a secret council for the extra wealthy people in Jerusalem. He says it to all. And it's really important for us to realize that we are very wealthy people. Now, we might not think of ourselves this way, but compare your lives with people that lived 200 years ago. Actually, look up how kings and queens lived 300 years ago. You actually live a more comfortable existence than royalty did 300 years ago. None of us, my guess is, have actually had to worry about starving to death because we can't find food. Many of us don't have to worry about exposure, of dying from extreme heat or extreme cold because we're out in the middle of nowhere. Most of us don't spend most of our day simply occupied with getting food. We don't have to hunt, we don't have to gather, we don't have to grow our own food. And on top of all of that, we don't have chronic lice and polio. The cherry on top. Now this is important, right? We live lives that are very comfortable. And this is a good thing. We live in very fortunate lives to be able to have these kinds of comforts, to not have to have the kind of worries that a lot of people around the world to this day still have. But the challenge for us is that we actually have to see ourselves as rich. Because the problem is that oftentimes we spend a lot of our time pointing our finger at those who are richer than us. And what we do is, when we do this kind of this weird mix of both envy and criticism. You ever notice this, that seemingly in the same moment we can criticize somebody who spends way too much money on something, yet we can envy somebody who's living lives that are just a little more exotic than ours, who has maybe a little better car, maybe takes nicer vacations, maybe has the iPhone X or 10, whatever it's called, instead of the iPhone 7. That the problem is that when we don't see ourselves as being wealthy, comfortable people, we're going to spend all of our lives pointing the finger at other people. And what that does is it's a way of deflecting criticism from ourselves. It's a way of not actually looking at our own lives, how we appropriate ourselves to the wealth in which we've been given. Now this brings me to, I think, Jesus' second point today. On one hand, he wants us to know that we are rich. The second thing is a simple command: stop acquiring. He says, don't store up things on earth. You see, if we think of ourselves as people who are poor, who are in need, who envy, then we're always going to be looking to acquire new things. We're always going to see people who have a little bit more than us, and we're going to be envious of those people. Now, as a caveat here, of course, we always have to keep this in mind. Like, material possessions are not intrinsically bad. God created the world, and he created it good. So material things aren't good. But what material possessions are supposed to help us do, one of the things they're supposed to help us do is they're supposed to free us up from worry. So the idea is that it's good that we don't have to worry about whether we're going to starve to death. We don't have to worry about whether we're going to have clothing, shelter. And that actually frees us to worship God. It frees us to love other people. But for us, when we think about material things, that's not really, you know, what we think about, right? Instead, we think about how much more we want. And we spend so much of our time occupied with stuff that isn't going to last. There is a landfill somewhere out there that has all of my old action figures, all of my old compact discs, an old car or two, And these things don't matter at all. And I spent hours of my life thinking about these things, worrying about these things. I spent thousands of dollars on these things. This is a challenging command that Jesus gives us today, to not store up goods. It's challenging because we live in a society that constantly tells us the exact opposite. The message of our society is that you will feel happy with the more goods that you have. Our economic system is built on this. John Stuart Mill and Adam Smith, buddies in England. The ultimate good is utility. Utility is we try to maximize our goods and services, and that's how we acquire happiness. This kind of society is kind of odd in the course of human civilization. Most societies, simply acquiring more things was seen as intrinsically wrong. In Greek, the word is pleorexia, all the ancient societies, this idea of the simple being somebody who always wants to acquire more is kind of intrinsically bad. But for us, we think of it as a good. You read the stories around the holidays, there are always going to be stories about whether holiday spending is up or down. And if it's down, we're supposed to be worried. Will the GDP grow by 4% or 2%? We're actually taught to be scared if people are spending less money. The reason I bring all this up is that we have to see how ingrained this is into everything that we do. Every billboard we see, every ad on the side of a web page, what it's trying to get us to do is trick us into thinking that what we want is what we need. So, you know, the internet has this figured out more than anything else. So Google has every email that you've ever sent, every web search that you've ever had, and if you have, you know, Alexa in your home, every word that you're saying, they're taking all of those things, right? And, you know, they're selling them off to these different companies so that when you're on a website, there's going to be an ad on the side. And that ad is going to be calibrated, right, to stoke your desire. They're going to find out what is the thing that's going to get your eyes from going from that text to that advertisement. So I've already said this before. You know what it's going to be for me. It's not going to be anything related to cars. I drive a Pontiac Vibe, so you know I don't care about cars. It's not going to be the newest Audi or anything like that. It's going to be burritos. Because the internet knows that I like burritos. So one in every three ads is for Chipotle or for Qdoba or anything like that. Right? Because they know that's what my desire is. And they're going to try to get me to go from my desires to go from looking at whatever I'm looking at on the web to getting over there. This is how our world operates. The idea is that our world operates in such a way as they want to take our desires and move them in another direction. And I say, you're focused on this. I want you to spend a couple minutes, a couple hours a day thinking about this thing that you want. I want you to think of it as a need. So you're going to spend time thinking about it, and then your money is going to go towards that. What happens is, if we kind of just assume this kind of lifestyle, is that our desires are going to be split. Jesus says, you can't serve two gods. You can't serve God and money. The word for money is actually mammon. It's basically a kind of demon. It's saying that you can't kind of be fixed on God with all of your desires constantly being flowed out towards all these things that you don't need. You're going to be of two different minds. You know, so for me, I can become fixated on eating out. So even by myself, like I said, I'll just go and instead of eating leftovers in the fridge, I spend time thinking about where I'm going to go out to eat. And I spend money on things that I don't really need. So it's keeping me distracted. So how, though, can we break these habits? How can we break these habits of acquisition? Well, let me make a few suggestions. The first thing is that we need to take stock of our lives. Ask ourselves this simple question. Do we rely on things that we don't need to rely on? Maybe it's something material. Maybe when we're stressed or we feel like we need to reward ourselves, we do a little online shopping. We treat ourselves to a couple more Starbucks. Maybe for some of us, we feel like we've earned that 3 hours of Netflix at night instead of maybe that 30 minutes Netflix. What are the things in which we've trained ourselves to say, like, this is what I rely on. This is my comfort. This is my security. I want you to pick one thing this week. Maybe it's some sort of material thing. Maybe it's your time. Pick one thing that maybe you're relying on that you don't need to rely on. And then I think long-term for us, I think a deeper outlook is that we need to become people who, on a very practical level, envision our lives and our lifestyle of actually being a class below rather than a class above us. This is going to be a challenge throughout your life, is that the more money you make, your lifestyle and your spending is just going to equal that. You're just going to do it naturally. So it's like more money, that means bigger house, more cars, nicer cars. And so many people actually just keep going like that. So you can meet people that make 6-7 figures and have no savings because they just make more and they spend more. As Christians, a very simple thing is actually think the opposite. What are people like who live a class below you? How do they spend their money? Maybe they have a smaller house. Maybe they use public transit more. Maybe they don't eat out as often. Maybe they grow their own food. And this is just a very simple way in which what's going to happen is we can actually then become free from the hold that material things have on our life. Because this is what God wants for us. Right? We don't have to all kind of sell everything and move into the desert and become a monk. But what God is calling us to is to become free from that pull that material things have on us. It'll be hard at first, but ultimately you'll be free. The person I think who embodies that more than anything is my friend Jonathan, who Allie and I know went to college with Allie, and he loves, he's a minister, he loves working with immigrants and refugees. And he said, you know, if I'm going to work with these people, if I love these people, I'm going to live where they live, and I'm going to live as they live. So he lives in the western suburbs of Chicago, and he has a very small, pretty cheap apartment. It's got everything you need. It's got utilities, it's got electricity, it's got appliances. He's got a car that's a little bit older, and he lives there, and he lives a lifestyle that is a little bit lower than all of his other peers. And what's amazing when you talk to Jonathan is that the conversation never centers around material things. He always seems to be talking about his neighbors and about Jesus. He has a kind of freedom from that hold of material things. Now here's the thing, that the idea behind taking these steps is to actually make us freer people. When we stop acquiring, when we stop fixating on these things, we become people who are more free. But we're free for a specific purpose. This brings me to the last point, that we're free to start giving. Our passage from the book of Acts, I think, highlights something incredible. What you see here is it's this picture of essentially the first church in Jerusalem. And it says here that everybody had everything in common, and they sold all their possessions and gave to everyone as they had need. Think about that. People were so thrilled to encounter Jesus. They were so excited to be in a community that had Jesus as its center that they just turned over all of their possessions to the community. in a sense, they stop seeing possessions as possessions. And everything they had was used towards helping and blessing one another. So this is true early on. You know, if you were Christians for the first couple centuries, didn't own private property. So if you became a Christian, you just turned over what you had, and that became part of the church. And so if you're really wealthy, they'd be like, oh, you became a Christian? Great. The church is just going to start meeting at your house because you're one of the few people with land. And people were just like, yeah, of course. So all the old churches were in atriums, basically, you know, kind of extended patios. It's just the wealthiest people, they had more, and so they turned that over. I think the biggest step, whenever we come to something like giving, the biggest step for us is going from the transition to seeing what we have as not being ours. It's to stop saying the word my and mine. Think about, you know, why do little kids say the word mine? They usually say it when they're asked to share something that they don't want to share. You know, my little niece, she holds on to that unicorn and she says mine with white knuckles. And so when you ask somebody who says mine to give, giving can only be done begrudgingly. It's parting with something that is yours. It's giving it away, and that's always difficult. Now, the key to actually giving is actually begins with how we actually see the stuff around us that we have. It's when we begin to stop seeing it as ours. It's when we begin to see it as things that God has actually given us. God has blessed us with time, with possessions, with money. And what he wants us to do with that is, one, he wants us to be free to worship him. But he wants us also to begin to see how we can bless other people with how God has blessed us. This is what Jesus is getting at. He says, don't let your right hand know what your left hand is doing when you're giving. He says that giving should just be something that is freely done. In many ways, it happens almost unconsciously or subconscious. Because we don't have to make that first step of saying, this is mine, and ouch, I have to give it away. You say, God has blessed me with these things. How can I then look around me and bless other people? So what we should do is, we should look at what God has given us. When you look at your schedules, don't look at the things that are colored in, look at the white spaces. Look about all that time that God has given you. When you think about your material goods, think about what you have. Don't think about what you don't have. When you think about your money, think about what's in your bank account. And think about how God is inviting you to bless other people with those things. What God wants us to do is see this as opportunities to leverage what he has given us to bless and love others. Let me give you an example. Family I know, Phil and Nikki Ephraim. He's some of my old friends. I met them when I was first starting out in ministry. I was starting a youth group at a high school. And some of Phil and Nikki's daughters were involved. And so I got to encounter these people. And when you meet them, you would not think of them as being very wealthy people. Like, Phil would wear, you know, like, jeans and a plaid shirt, and he was an engineer, so he'd always have, like, pens in the pocket, you know. And they had a nice house, but it was a house in, like, not the greatest of neighborhoods. Like, Nikki would say just, like, offhand, she's like, yeah, someone was, like, trying to break in the other day, and I just kind of had to, like, shoo him away. Just very, like, nonchalantly, you know. But you meet them more, you talk to them, you realize they had an extraordinary amount of wealth. Phil actually is one of the inventors of the Red Solo Cup. You know, sweeping colleges across the nation, right? He didn't actually make his money in that because he was just an engineer at Solo at that time. But he started a company that makes industrial grinders. So, like, you know, selling to Starbucks, things that grind a lot of coffee beans and things like that. So rather than seeing all this money as a way to buy a second or third home in some exotic locale, they looked at everything they owned and just saying, how can we actually bless other people? So they did this in big ways. They actually built an entire camp in Guatemala. He actually had to start his own construction company to build it. And that they do there, they do kind of like Christian events and Christian revivals, and then they fly doctors down as well to give free medical care to all the residents around there. So he would do really incredible things like that, and do even little things like he was supporting my ministry, which was hilarious because I wasn't really good at it. I thought he would realize this, so his daughters were in it, but he still just naturally give in these ways. Not only that, though, their home exuded generosity. What do I mean by that? Every time we come over, you know, Nikki would just have a bunch of food and would just give us a bunch of food and leftovers. And there were always just like random people in their house who I didn't know. Like, a neighbor kid was having, troubles with his parents, and so he was just staying at their house for a couple weeks. They worked a lot with, they had friends of ours who were immigrants. They're having problems with some of their naturalization process, so they were like living in their home for a couple weeks. Their house was just always open. And you could just see how there was just this blessing for everyone that entered into their home, and there was such life there and vitality. These are people, I think, who exuded generosity. The old word is munificence. I love that. See, these people have figured out how to approach material things. And I think for us, how we live lives like that, it starts, though, in these very simple ways. It doesn't start when we make a ton of money and then decide to give it away to some charity. It starts in those little ways now, in which we can stop relying on material things and look for opportunities to bless other people. So I mentioned this earlier on, so think about one thing this week, just one thing, something that you're relying on that you don't need to rely on. Maybe it's where you're spending your money, maybe it's, fixating on some material goods, maybe it's just, half hour, an hour a day of something that, you don't really need to rely on. Think about not doing that this week. But think about how you can bless somebody else with that extra time or that extra money. Use that time to spend some more time with God. Use that time to volunteer. Use that time just to maybe hang out with somebody else who needs a friend. Maybe with that money you can donate it somewhere. Maybe you just buy somebody lunch this week. But start to think how you can use these things to bless other people. And I think the hope is that if we begin to do these things, we'll be people who are more free from material wants and people who exude the love of God. Thanks be to God.